Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the New Hollywood Podcast. I am your co-host Amanda Nduka.
And I'm Dina Ray Ramos. And this episode we have the star of Netflix's She's Gotta Have It, DaWanda Wise. And she walked in. She looked really good when she walked in.
Yeah, she was super. I mean, she had a lot of energy. Came with her green juice.
I think also she didn't she just have like a photo shoot or something. Oh no, I think she was coming from the LA Times or something.
Something. I don't know, but she looked great. So she's the star of this Netflix series that is an adaptation of Spike Lee's film that came out in the
80s.
It was in the 80s, right?
Yeah, it was like. No, it wasn't his first.
No. It wasn't the 80s. We have to probably cut it. It wasn't the 80s. It was the 80s.
But it wasn't his first. I don't think it was his first film.
But it was, you know, I remember it was like, it was an all black and white. What stood out, it was talking about this female who was super like sexually liberated. And that was like, it was kind of not... Was that what it was like? But I mean, I was.
You know what? I think honestly,
that was like a big theme.
I don't think it's that much different in how, you know, that character was. I think it was
like
different eras, yeah. But kind of the same themes being explored. In terms of, you know, but you know, because now we have texting and stuff. In 86, there wasn't much.
There,
but I think it's just kind of like. The female perspective. I don't know. I always say it was kind of like Sex in the City before there was Sex in the City.
Was there a lot? But there wasn't a lot of that. Then, right. That's like, what I meant. Yeah.
Female perspective.
Yeah. Having a female that's so like free and so like, you know, like I said, liberal, like, sexual. I don't know if that was like a big. I don't think that was a big theme of. Anyways, so definitely, I don't know if I would call it. I guess what I'm saying is what I was trying to say, should I call it before its time or
I guess or yeah no? I guess you would say it was before its time because it was a female woman of color kind of the lead and doing like these very thematic, you know, heavy, like things that weren't talked about much that,
yeah,
back in the
exactly
day.
Yeah. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
well I mean, you know, this first season is currently available on Netflix.
I binged it, couldn't take my eyes off of it. This was Spike Lee's first feature. I always got confused. I thought it was School Days, but
She was about to start filming season two when she came in for this interview.
I think she left the next day to go to New York and start filming.
So she's definitely a lively, you know.
A lot of cool things.
I would put her in the category of we're in the trajectory of like a Kerry Washington,
a Viola Davis.
That came up in the podcast. I mean, she's a female lead. She's doing her thing. So do you want to get to the episode?
Yeah.
Let's get to the episode. So here is DaWanda Wise. So welcome, DaWanda Wise, to the New Hollywood Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, DaWanda. We're so happy.
You and your luscious braids, which I'm really jealous of right
braids,
now.
You got your braids, you got your juice.
Yes, she's girl came ready. Yes. So let's start with like your early experience in Hollywood, because this is a New Hollywood Podcast. We like to talk about like, especially like when it comes to diversity and people that are within the group of people in colors. Mm-hmm. People of color, in color.
People in color.
What was your experience like when you first got into the business? Like, what kind of roles were you going for? Or were you, like, put in a box? Or was it, like, a, you know...
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Was it... I went to school in New York. Mm-hmm. So I was also, like, I came into being. In New York, in the work there, it's so fascinating. I moved here in, like, 2012. I was going in for primarily, like, very, very character-based work, mm-hmm. you know, just very specific. And mind you, background, I started when I was in, I started in 2000 and I joined SAG in, like, 2005,
okay.
you know. And there were these ebbs and flows, which, in hindsight, I can look back and see very clearly. Like, the writer's strike... Mm-hmm. Which was around 2007 or 8 or something.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
The writer's strike had a huge impact on the roles that I was going in for. Like all of a sudden, leading people who were leading TV shows were going in for guest roles. Guest stars mm-hmm. were going in for co-stars. Mm-hmm. Like it really knocked everything down. So mm-hmm. it was fascinating because in college, I mean, I went in for like Y'all remember that movie, Children of Men?
Oh, yeah.
I went in for Claire. I was up for Claire Hope Ashley's role. You know, and this was all, like, it gave me a really, like, false sense of self in college because I was going in for some really, I went in for Avatar.
Oh, wow.
I had a callback for Avatar in college. I need to move closer.
David, I'm going to do that.
But I was, you know, very early on.
Was it Zoe's role?
Yeah, for Zoe. Oh, I don't know why I was in to be real.
This is when you first started out. You were getting
you were auditioning for Avatar.
Yes. Damn.
Yeah. So
they're making more. They're making more. You could go.
Zoe needs a sister.
Exactly.
So I really had, you know, my introduction to the industry gave me a lot of encouragement, mm-hmm. to okay. be really honest with you. And then shit got real, real and dark for like 10 years.
As they do.
But in the very beginning, you know, I never had that thought where I was like, oh, I don't see myself in the industry. One, I wasn't thinking about it too much. I was just like busy living my life. But more than that, you know, there were opportunities for me.
Okay. So when you say like the dark time, was it the opportunities weren't as much, or were you like...
They did not exist.
Okay.
You know? I've read multiple interviews from actresses who look like me, who are like, you know, 10 to 15 years older, who were very transparent about taking roles because they have bills to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Makes sense.
It makes sense.
We all take jobs that we really don't 100% like. I worked as a host at Cracker Barrel.
I worked as a host, not Cracker Barrel.
I was like, whoa.
But very close. I worked, this was high school. I've been working for my whole life. But I was a hostess at Bob Evans.
What's Bob Evans? I don't know what that
Bob is. Bob Evans is literally Cracker Barrel.
Wait, I'm from Maryland.
Maryland.
Okay. Okay. I was gonna say, do they have Cracker Barrel? I know it's like in the South. I
don't know. Yeah, it's definitely.
So that was like the Southern version. Yes. Or the
like slightly Northern version.
Yeah, Northern version.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, sorry, go on. I just had to.
No, but there was, you know, there was definitely, and during that moment, which I would say, you know, from experientially for me, it was about from like 2007 to 2012, where it was just like the dark times. Mm-hmm. I worked primarily in theater. I just always, you know, went where the opportunities for me to fully do and live in the capacity of my talent existed. Like, I didn't spend time being like, oh.
Like, there's nothing out there for
me. There's nothing out there for me. I'm like, oh, I'm doing regional theater in Pittsburgh? Great.
Yeah.
This is where I live now.
Yeah.
That's what we had Diarra Kilpatrick, and she did the same exact thing. Like, she
Diarra's
did
the homie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Theater was where she was able to, like, fully, like.
Absolutely.
Like, use all her muscles in acting, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't, yeah. You don't. There's theater doesn't get enough attention.
I mean, not y'all not in like, LA.
Not in LA. You guys,
yeah,
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 was LA.
Yeah, she did it in LA.
There's
too.
No theater. And
if you're,
scene
but if
in
you're,
LA.
But I feel like even in, I don't know, but I mean, I'm not New York, but in New York, if you're not Broadway, do people really?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. This is how, you know, she's got to have it partially happen because I did this play at Labyrinth Theater. Labyrinth Theater is like basically supposed to be for the artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Huge theater, Philip Seymour Hoffman was the artistic director forever and ever. And so really, really fantastic reputation and known for doing work that like pushed the envelope, really edgy stuff. And I did this play in 2013, a role I originated by this playwright named Dominique Morisseau called Sunset Baby. Mm-hmm. And all of the, we had playwrights in our room in season one. They had all seen me in that play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There was a day where... There was a blizzard, a literal blizzard. And mind you, this is in the West Village. It's like a 20-minute walk from the nearest train.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone showed up.
Wow.
The casting community, producers, directors, people show up. Spike saw Hamilton like eight times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how he said he got
Anthony.
That Anthony. Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, that's the community
there. Shout out to theater.
Yes, theater.
Give it some more
saw spotlight. Anthony Hamilton, not Sprague.
Oh, yeah, he did. I'm still bitter because I haven't seen Hamilton, so.
Yeah, you should be bitter.
Thank you. I tried, though.
Salt.
Next time you go to New York, just put your name in the lottery or just.
F that lottery.
I was lucky. Yeah. I will forever tell my story of how I won the
Tell my story. Tell my story.
I'm gonna be.
I tried the damn lottery and it didn't work.
I got to see it. It was right when Lizzie Odom Jr. came back. I was just like.
Yeah, I saw original cast. I was just like.
But anyways, welcome back. That was our Hamilton segment.
Yeah.
So in some of your past roles or in auditions even, were there any instances where you kind of had to mask kind of who you are or like your identity or compromise?
Well, that
kind
was
of
like
yeah, because I feel like a lot of like actresses, I mean the ones that I like, they have to like kind of be a certain way to be acceptable to the casting directors who are mostly for
did
the most
you
part
have, like
one.
Any extreme incidents like that, or were you just kind of like,
listen,
I know it's hard.
But it's also, I kind of just you know, had this conversation in a sense, because there were years where, you know, I did the showcase in 2009, ABC Diversity Show again. And at the time, the pervasive wisdom, right, for series regular roles was that the producers, the directors, the creators, the EPs or whatever were looking to cast the person because this is like who you're going to be. And even now, I'm about to give y'all some little insider tips.
Okay.
Little insider tips. Even now, you know, it's very difficult for people to see something in front of them and then, like, imagine how it would be if, know, XYZ. So at the time, you know, it was like, oh, they want to cast the person. And I enjoy acting. I'm an actor who enjoys acting. Mm-hmm. Like, if I, you know, wanted to be myself, then I would pitch a reality television show and I would be myself, right? So it was just a notion that I cast aside, which was many things. Like if something that I just didn't vibe with or just I felt like didn't apply to me, even when I was training, I was like, all right, well, that don't apply to me. Like, you know. So then I developed a habit of walking into the room or at this point at my shiny stage into a meeting alluding to the character.
Okay.
So it didn't feel like I was compromising myself because I never wanted to be, I don't need to be myself, you know? Mm-hmm. If I'm playing a black woman who has, you know, lived traditionally and gone through like white spaces her entire life and lives in an industry, you know, she's a lawyer, for example, where it's customary for them to press their hair, I don't feel compromised to press my hair.
Okay.
You know, I just go, oh, okay, this would be the life of this woman.
Okay.
You know? So yeah, I never felt or took on that kind of like, and if there was anything that's, you know, outside of something I felt comfortable with or even my wheelhouse, you know, I don't believe I can do everything or should do everything. And I just don't do it. I just keep my job at Umami Burger.
Yeah.
I want some of that right
now. And keep it pushing.
So you star as you star in She's Gotta Have It. You play Nola Darling, who I think is what kind of embodies what black women have been fighting for a while,
right?
Which is freedom to express yourself whichever way you want to. But this role actually was originated back in, I'm probably gonna get this
86.
I was gonna say 86. Do you feel a pressure when you're doing like a reboot? Do you feel a pressure to live up to what the original does, or do you just kind of go into it with your own mind frame and your own interpretation?
I definitely walked into this like, oh, this is what, you know, Nola would be like in 2016.
Okay.
Hands down. She was, you know, when Spike created 86 Nola Darling, his thinking was, what if a woman did what a man did? You know, and what's super inspiring about this moment, like a Me Too, a Time's Up moment, is now it's no longer enough to just put our bodies in like, or change a name, right? To like just blanket write a character and then be like, oh, now we're just gonna cast da-da-da-da. But for the writing to actually reflect the human being. So that is to say, when he wrote it in 86, he just wrote it and it was like, what if a woman did what a man did? Yeah. And so much of our update was about making Nola Darling a woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much about our update was like,
oh my God. I just came to that realization before there was Carrie Bradshaw, there was Nola Darling.
Yeah. Yes.
People don't like that. Absolutely. Which is really funny when people are like, oh, Sex in the City. And you're like, but she exists in 86. Before,
yeah. Yeah.
Just like how Living Single was Friends.
Yeah! Dina will argue that to the T. Before there was Friends, there was Living Single. Before. Which I just currently binge Living Single.
Me too. And I didn't watch see that. It when I was
yeah,
a kid.
No, me too.
But, I remember watching it, but it's like, you watch it again. And yeah, it's kind of corny, but it was the 90s. Yeah.
It was the 90s. And there, I mean, I'm total Maxine.
Yo, me too. Gosh. I am so a Maxine.
Such a Maxine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm in between Maxine and, why am I blaming?
Regine?
Not Regine.
Sinclair. Sinclair.
Queen Latifah's character.
Oh.
Why can't I think of her name?
Khadijah.
Khadijah. Oh my gosh, thank you. She had it back there. She was like, so bad. I think I'm between. What have you learned from playing her, from playing Nola?
I've learned to ask for what I need. I've learned to ask for what I need. I've learned to detach asking for what I need from any connotation or what other people will think of it, right? So a lot of like young actors are terrified of asserting themselves or asking for very basic,
yeah,
asking for very, very basic things like, this is what I need for makeup, or, you know, because they're like, I don't want to come across as
demanding.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you're up and coming.
Yes.
But so, that's so good. Ask for what you need.
Just ask for what you need.
It's common sense.
But
I feel like that's still a very hard, like, it's easier said than done, basically. Especially when, like you said, you're an up and coming actor, this is your first big job. You don't want to mess it up.
You but don't want to, like, cause any ripples.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if you're just a person of color in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or, like, a gay person.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Anyone who's marginalized, yeah. It becomes, and I've seen it more, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I literally think like, what would a straight white dude do?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would they ask
what
for?
What would straight white, that's the new bracelet.
What would a straight white dude do? That's a good point, like asking for what, not being afraid to ask for,
I mean,
what
you need. Because also, and it's been my experience in the last 2 years where like, I'm not a mean person. So knowing and trusting I'm the human being that I am, is a big and like integral component mm-hmm. of asking for what you need, because at the end of the day, I'm gonna treat you with love and respect and it's gonna be great. Mm-hmm. You know, I just worked on a project and my makeup artist in New York, I sent him like, this is how my no makeup makeup works, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said he didn't sleep for 2 days. Yeah, Bethany, that was your email. He said he didn't sleep for 2 days. He was terrified that I was going to be a nightmare. And then it was like a pleasant surprise when we met and we had a like great time. It was 6 weeks. It was super fun.
I think we need to get rid of that notion when people ask for what they need.
Then it means something else.
Or they're being mean about it. Like, yes. And I think you made a good point when you say asking for what you need versus like what you want.
Yeah, that makes like the total difference.
It's completely different connotation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, this is what I need to do my job well.
Yeah, exactly.
Or and it's like, I need a new Tesla.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Or I need a 3-story trailer or something.
Right. Right. Yeah, this last project, we were in Honey's.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
but I need my makeup to look
good. Exactly.
No, that makes
that's
like,
important. That's
I
important.
Like that. Ask for what
especially
you need.
For, like,
that's
black
a
women
t-shirt,
like,
too.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear that t-shirt with what would a straight white
man
so,
brand new way.
So the first season of She's Gotta Have It, I remember watching it, and it covers a lot of ground.
A lot of ground. Very Spike.
Very, like, identity politics. Yeah. You got gentrification, masculinity, feminism, being a black woman. It's just, there's a lot. Prince.
Prince.
So there, there's a lot of covers. So
I was like, oh, she loves basketball too? Really, Spike?
But like, where do you think that kind of like, y'all pack a lot in this season, so where could it possibly go in season two, and like, are we going to see a different tone, are we going to see a shift in like what's going on, or
are there more suitors?
Are you filming it right now, or are you
done? We start in a week.
Oh, you start, okay.
Yeah, I have
so
all
you,
the
you read everything.
Read it, you
so
read
why don't you just perform the first episode right now?
Everything.
And we could, no. But like, where could it possibly go? Because I'm like all thinking, like, there's a lot that happened.
There's a lot that happened. What else can they do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny you should ask where we could go, because we literally changed locations. We step out of Brooklyn for 2 episodes, both of which are they're probably my favorites so far. And yeah, you know, they're my
favorite. Can you say where, or you want to keep that a secret?
I think it has to be a secret.
Okay, this is Netflix.
One of them is so beautiful.
Okay.
And so, like, it's very, very Spike Lee.
It's and it's kind of integral to the story, I'm guessing. That's
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
But is it still New York, though?
No. Okay. We literally.
So we know it's not New York.
It's not New York.
We're leaving.
Okay. They're in Wakanda.
Yes. That would be amazing.
They're in Wakanda.
Okay.
I'm sure Spike, I think Spike said he saw it. He saw Black Panther like 3 times.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Would not be Spike.
No, so like you changed locations.
Yes.
And like kind of where Nola is, like at the end of season one and like at the beginning of season. Like,
right.
How much time passed? Can you say that?
6 months.
Okay.
So it's 6 months later. Mm-hmm. It's a summer shoot.
Okay.
Okay. Summer in New York.
Okay. Hence the braids. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really, and I'm excited. You know, if you're familiar with his work.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching and capturing the energy of like Brooklyn.
Yeah, how he does
summer,
that is just so.
Well, it's also extreme. Like, if you know anyone who, if you responded to the party scenes, it's because Spike just throws a party and films it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Can we get it? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Come on through. Come on by.
With like with what you're doing and like with like what Viola's doing and Carrie and having these very strong, like I said, unapologetic
Thank
black females.
Thank you for
females
just saying my name with.
Oh,
Viola.
but you're in that category. Like
you
are.
You're in, girl.
No pressure. But like, do you feel like the paradigm is kind of shifting when it comes to black female representation in Hollywood?
Yes. And I think specifically to that point, now roles are being written with that thought process. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to set and be like, where's her hair wrap?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You like, know, she doesn't, when she's asleep, she sleeps with the hair, she sleeps with the bonnet on.
Yeah.
Like,
is this a silk pillowcase? Or?
Exactly.
And that's
just
really.
Just those nuances that are being placed in.
Those
like,
nuances.
Yeah.
And, you know, the project that I just worked on was incredibly diverse. And the writer, you know, she's Jewish and woke as fuck.
Okay.
Just brilliant and considerate and open and like, tell me, mm-hmm. you know, if there was anything, you know, there was like one phrase, for example, where one of my friends called me aggressive and I was like, we can't use that word. It's loaded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's loaded. Loaded for my people.
Yeah.
You got to say extra.
Yeah, exactly. It
oh
is.
Oh my God. So like, you know how you mentioned, you said Viola, Carrie, and mm-hmm. now DeWanda. What if there was a crossover event between She's Gotta Have It and How to Get Away with Murder?
Well, here, I mean, Shonda is coming to Netflix.
Yeah,
oh my
she
God.
Is.
You, okay, Nola seeks the legal help of Emily.
He's really trying to write this episode.
I'm writing it right now in my head. Yeah, so.
You better speak this DeWanda Viola collaboration into existence.
You're right. Tell the universe.
I'm like picturing it right now. It would be a bizarre crossover, but
it would be
work.
A mashup.
Because honestly, like Nola and
How to Get Away with You Gotta Have It.
I feel like they're kind of like this. Kind of, they have a lot of similarities.
Yes.
Nola.
Yeah,
because
they're both like these very outspoken women,
mm-hmm.
and they're like they take no shit from no one.
Right.
So I think, but then I think they wouldn't get along then.
I always get along.
I think they would.
I feel like I'm a.
I think like you acclimate better than I think Annalise does.
That's
think?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nola's ebbs and flows.
And she has.
And she doesn't judge.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is something that.
And Annalise has a lot of baggage. Well,
yeah.
so is Nola,
yeah,
but Annalise. You know. There's some murders involved in there.
We're really trying to make this happen.
I am. Shonda, are you?
If you're listening.
If you're listening. So you got She's Gotta, and you mentioned some projects. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you're allowed to say titles, but like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've been announced.
There's one that's The Weeknd.
Oh, yeah. They
and
have
The
that
Weeknd.
One.
Yeah. Something.
And Stella McGee something, and someone
yeah,
great.
Yeah. yeah.
Stella McGee. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah. Black female director.
Yes.
Wait, there's
yes.
that one movie I saw she did.
Everything,
she calls
everything.
That movie. We kept saying,
yes.
like,
everything, everything.
We kept calling it Elevated Blackness.
Yes.
Like, The Weeknd is like, you know, we're off in an Airbnb. You know what I mean? My character's like. Super bougie. I've never played a character like her before. Her name's Margot.
Bougie?
I've never played
super
that.
Bougie? Like,
super bougie.
Okay.
Completely
I like
outside.
The bougie sometimes.
I love her I so it. Much.
Okay. Well, it's like you were mentioning before about, you know, having like this, a writer and a creator that's like very open, like
mm-hmm.
being on a set. And like, it just makes a difference. Because I've been watching that show Vita. I've been obsessed with that, and like it has a Latinx writers' room. Mm-hmm. Most of the directors have been Latinx. It's created by a Latinx director, and like it's a queer narrative as well.
Right.
And you could feel it.
You can feel it. Yeah. You can feel a difference.
You can. Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah. Especially in like projects like especially what she's got. Well, of course, it's Spike. So,
but all of it, like, you know, surrounding him was just this bevy of black women. Mm-hmm. And he trusted me a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's in his early 60s, so I can speak to what it means to be a late 20s black girl right now, you know? And he's like, yeah, that's true.
Did you actually paint those portraits?
Part of it. There were. I mean, no, obviously not. Tatiana Fazlalisa Day. She's like, Tatiana painted them.
Okay.
But there were takes of a lot of the collage and a lot of the painting sequences. I was like, is anyone going to call cut?
Oh, yeah.
You know? So you were just kind of like.
Well, I learned enough to like figure it out. I've learned a lot about makeup, and a lot of painting, right, is about contouring and all the stuff. And so I learned enough to fake it for 20 minutes because I had to, but I'd be like, can you please, you're not going to use this 20 minute take? The show is like 35 minutes.
It's going to be 20 minutes of you painting, 10 minutes of exposition.
So I, you know, I'm a significantly better visual artist, but no, I would never add that to my resume.
So first question is there something on your bucket list that you haven't checked off that you're wanting to do like within the next
year?
Like 5 years.
You mean creatively?
Or anything, just like life.
Like jumping off a plane or whatever. Like, is there anything that you haven't done yet?
Starting a clothing line, rap record.
That's good. Those are really good.
Aim for
good.
The stars. Yeah.
Okay, creatively, I do not know how I have not played like a witch or a werewolf or I really don't. I'm really confused. I look evil.
I am. I have another project.
The idea. Okay, let's come.
The Craft reboot.
Yeah. The Craft. One of the best movies.
It is. Thank you.
They're doing The Crow.
The Crow. I think there have been talks for.
And they're doing Charm on CW.
They're doing, yeah.
Charm is gonna be fun.
It's gonna be great. Yeah,
we'll see.
Shot us down.
I said we'll see.
I would really love to like go to the Amazon.
Oh, just to hang out, like,
and maybe get lost.
Yes. So like roughing it, not like five-star accommodation.
Yeah, I would really like to just go. She said, no, glamping.
No, that's
glamping
okay.
Yeah, I'm not an outdoorsy
person. I'm not outdoorsy at all.
Oh, that's hilarious. No, allies, cool.
I'm sure my ancestors were like jungle people too.
Yeah, they're like, appalled.
Yeah, and then they're like, they're looking at me. They're like, oh, you are a wimp.
Probably, honestly.
Okay, so like I mentioned, of course, the Charmed reboot, but we'll talk, not the Charmed reboot, but the reboot I'm planning for you.
Yes,
with
the Craft.
The
Craft. Yep.
But, so she's got to have it as one of the many reboots and like reboots, revivals happening in Hollywood right now. If you can be a part of another reboot or revival, like, and you're in charge, you star, you're show running.
It's your show.
It's your show. What would
it be? If I wanted to bring something else back.
Yeah.
TV
or movie.
I would probably. Oh, what would I bring back?
So many.
There's a lot, yeah.
Guys, I saw Set It Off Live.
Oh my God!
Live?
It's the stage play.
What? I saw people going
to
that.
Why didn't I know this?
Where? Was that here?
It was traveling. Oh. They did come to LA.
Why didn't I know
this? I saw someone on Instagram went there and I was just like, oh, where is this?
Okay. But basically, like anything Jada did in the 90s, I would like to do. It could be Inkwell.
Oh.
Gosh. Set It Off.
Different world.
I talked to Nicole Beharie years ago about Set It Off.
I need two more people. You, Nicole, and then.
Can Danielle Brooks be in it?
Danielle Brooks. That's a good one.
Nicole Byer.
Yes!
Okay, I would love Nicole Byer to be in that.
Oh my God, that's a great! I love that dude. Set It Off.
Oh my God, we're setting up all these projects.
We're doing it.
We got the pitch meeting. How to Get Away with Murder. She's got to have a mashup. We got the Craft reboot.
And doing
it.
And
we got to Set It
It's
Off.
Gonna happen.
We have the next three projects for you. Thank you. I mean, you're welcome, Duwanda.
So knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self?
Oh my goodness.
This one's kind of heavy. This one is kind of heavy.
The advice I would give my 16-year-old self. I love 16-year-old DeWanda.
I don't like 16-year-old
DeWanda. She was
What were you into when you were 16?
Well, when I was 6, I just started acting when I was 15. Like, okay. I discovered my life's purpose a year before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, that's good.
And, you know, those questions are always really difficult for me because I always kept the journal, right? Mm-hmm. And I love looking back at where I've come from. I love looking back, you know, in my early 20s, I like wanted to be disciplined so bad. Like, I remember, like, I felt like I knew if I could find discipline, then I would be where I am. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's like one of the number one things. Like, I get up 3:30. I work out at 4 a.m. so that I could have, like, a good attitude and look great for my TV show. And everyone's like, oh, you're so disciplined. And I'd be like, man, I remember when I wasn't. You know, like, oh, thank you for recognizing that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And so it's, you know, it's really difficult because I am, like, really creepy about fate. Mm-hmm. Or like, I really believe in trusting the timing of your life. So I don't think if I wasn't the gaping wound, you know, the like high stakes, emotionally open, cry at a drop of a hat, emo, you know, 16-year-old that I was, I don't think I would be the woman I am now.
Great. That's a great point.
So see it through. Probably.
I like how you like your 16-year-old self. Yeah. I didn't like 16-year-old Dina.
I was still very confused.
I was a dumbass.
You're like, I was confused.
Maybe you can tell yourself, it's all going to work out at the end.
Yes.
You know what? You tell yourself. My 16-year-old self wouldn't have listened to me.
Yeah, one. But no, when I was a kid, I kid you not, this was my entire childhood, like 16 and below, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, man, being an adult is going to be great. I hated being a kid. Mm-hmm, I hated being a kid. I was like, being an adult is going to be great. And I was right.
It's great. So it's
some cards.
We're like, oh, it's all right.
I don't. Damn, guys. Why are we so. Okay, no. We're
like a wet blanket.
I know.
We're like raining on your parade. Welcome to the Rain on Your Parade podcast.
Right?
Okay. So this is the last question we ask all our guests. Is there a underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it be actor, producer, writer, or whoever, that you think deserves more time in the limelight?
Asian American actors.
Oh my god, thank you. You know who was just in here before you?
Oh my god.
We just had Jimmy O'Yang.
Yeah. When Constance Wu started like speaking out a couple of years ago and being like, basically like, what the fuck? Yeah. I was like, yup. Mm-hmm. You know? Shit. And whenever we talk about diversity, right? For years, it's been super black and white.
Yeah. Super black and white.
And then for some reason, Latino kind of like is on the side for some reason. It's like their own category.
It's like their own category. And when you look at it statistically, it's abhorrible, right? Mm-hmm. Like Latino representation is abhorrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was part of the reason basically with Someone Great, you know, stars Gina Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. She's the homie we trained together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I text her and I was like, is there a role for me in your movie? You know, like, I would like to be there to support you.
Awesome. Yeah.
I would like to be the number two to your number one. Mm-hmm. You know? And you know I'm going to show up for you in scenes. Mm-hmm. And you know I'm going to make sure you look great. You know? And we're going to have a blast. And we're going to, like, change this industry one project at a time.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Oh, my God. You just stole my heart.
No, I mean, I think you're right. Like, so much of the conversation is a black and white thing, but it's a lot. It's much more than that. It's not even
so much more nuanced.
Yeah.
And then we talk about, like, even talking about diversity, it's not even about race.
No,
you know?
It's not.
It's about the special actors with disabilities.
Yeah. It's about representing
like, LGBT.
Representing the world.
And I think we oftentimes forget about that because it so becomes like a black and white thing. Like,
and I know it's very human to be like, I got to fight for me. You know, I got to fight, you know. And it's harder, right, to like open up your fist and to like open up your vision and see the bigger picture in the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's what my friend group looks like. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, I'm just trying to bring it a little bit closer to what, you know.
And I just like how you said you you reached out to Gina and you were just like, oh, I'll be there for you. It's kind of like a lot of, you know, like Asians and black, the black community and the white, they kind of stay in their own realms.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's time to start like kind of reaching across the aisle.
It's time to start reaching across the aisle.
And be all, hey, you know, and it's like, it's music to my ears when I hear people say, like, they're like, oh, I'm so excited to see Crazy Rich Asians, but they're not Asian. They're like, oh, this is going to be so much fun, and just kind of, we're going to go out and support it.
Yeah.
So I think...
Yeah, it's time to show up for each other.
Yes.
I think so. Well, I think it's a great way to end it.
Yeah.
Like, Dwanda, seriously. That
Dwanda,
was great.
You have brought so much joy to this podcast studio and so much. Next time, bring more juice.
Yeah. My bad. I mean, it's $12.
I'm good.
Yeah. But thank you so much, Dwanda.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah.